Okay, hello, welcome to this next talk. User-defined functions and normalized views in Cassandra 3.0. Naturalized views, sorry, in Cassandra 3.0 by Duhai Duan.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, welcome back for those who are there. It's less popular than full-text search, I know. But I think this thing is more fundamental and has more impact than full-text search. People are like, oh, full-text search, I can play with my data. But this one has much more impact on your data model. So, yeah, always the same trademark policy slide. Cassandra, when I talk about Cassandra, it is Apache. Cassandra, the open source project, of course. Materialized view. So why do we create it, materialized view? Because we spend years and years telling to people, please denormalize. The same example again. I have a user table. The primary key is user ID. I want to be able to search user by country. So I need to create another table manually where I put the country in the primary key so I can search by primary key. And it is very, very boring for the developer because now, as a developer, I need to maintain consistency between the two tables, right? So, materialized view has been designed for this use case. So this is the syntax, create materialized view, user by country, as select. So you can select star, or you can select only some columns from the base table to denormalize, to duplicate. So the base tables here is user, where country is not null and ID is not null. So the is not null filtering is here to ensure that we don't have null values for primary key, right? Which is obvious. So with the materialized view, you can redefine the primary key of your base table. So it is exactly equivalent to create this table manually. Except that now Cassandra will manage the update of the view for you. So, syntax. You must select, so on the as select clause, you must select all primary key columns of the base tables. It is mandatory. So if on your base table you have three columns as the primary key, in your view, you need to have the three columns also. You can add additional columns, of course. The is not null, of course. Right now, the is not null is only on the primary key columns. But from Cassandra 3.10, which is not released yet, you can have arbitrary condition on any column. You can say where age is greater than 30. So in fact, you can choose to denormalize based on some criteria on your columns. And then you redesign the primary key for your view. So there are some complex rules to understand. So in the primary key of the view, you need at least all the primary key columns of the base table. The ordering can be different, of course. So you can switch the order. You can change a clustering column to become a partition key and so on. And you can add an extra column from the base table, which was not the primary key. And you can promote this extra column into a primary key in your view, but maximum one. So let's see some example. It will be much more clearer. So materialized view demo. I have a table artist, right? Let me insert new. No, not Spark. Cassandra. Select star from music artist. Limit 10. So let's see my artist data. Okay. Oh, so I have artist ID, the born date, the country, the year when they died, the gender, and so on. Fine. I want to search my artist by country. So now, what is my artist schema. Describe table. So my artist schema, so I have the artist ID as primary key. So I can only search my artist by artist ID, which is a new UID, not very useful. It is a technical ID. I want a functional ID. I want to be able to search my artist by country. So how can I do? I create a materialized view called artist by country as select star. So I denormalize all the columns. I duplicate all the columns where ID is not null and country is not null. And now the country is the partition key of my view. And of course, I need also to add the ID, which was the primary key of the original table. Because with only the country, I cannot distinguish between different users, right? It's because they have multiple users by country. So I need to add also the country, the user ID here. So let's create the view. Execution done. So successful. And now that my view is created, let's query it. So give me all artists living in France or in Spain, for example. So here are all the artists living in Spain. You see, Spain country is always Spain. Fine. But what is really nice is that the update of the view is done automatically for you by Cassandra. So if now I insert a new record into the user table, the view will be automatically updated. So let's say I insert a fake artist, Alice, country is Wonderland, okay. There is a mistake here, yes. Okay, the insert is successful. And now if I, oh, sorry. It's now Wonderland. I query my view with Wonderland. Alice. See? Now let's say I update Alice country. Let's say I said she is moving now from Wonderland to, I don't know, update. So what is the UID of Alice? This one. Update music artist. Set country is, I don't know. She moves to Oblivion. Where ID equals this one, okay? I don't know if the syntax is this one or I need to put simple code. Let's try. Oh, yeah. Error because I need to specify that I'm using Cassandra, of course. Okay. And now imagine that I continue to query. Who is living in Wonderland? Nobody. Who is in Oblivion? Alice. See? And so on. So, and you can create many materialized views on the same base table. So how is it implemented? Here, I have an example. I update my user country, right? So user ID is 1. Now I set the country, the new country is FR, France. The request, the update request just reached a coordinator. The coordinator will send the update to the 3 replicas in the cluster, right? And because I'm doing an update with consistency level, whatever, quorum 1 or. So the coordinator will wait for at least to have some acknowledgement before saying okay to the client. Now what happened is, because we have a view on the base table user, there will be a local lock acquired by Cassandra on each of the replica. So before executing the update on the country, because we have a view on this table, Cassandra will acquire lock or local lock on the partition on user ID 1. we'll do a local read, select star from user where ID equal 1, to fetch the current value of the country. What is the current value of the country before setting the country to FR, right? So select the current value of the country, create a batch log where it will delete from the view where country is all value, and insert a new row in the view with the new value of the country, which is FR. And after doing the batch log, it will execute the async. So it will release the log, execute an asynchronous batch log, so delete followed by insert, into all the replica of the view. So you can see the view as another normal table, in fact. Right. With consistency level 1, hard-coded to 1. And after that, it will apply the original update to the country. So it's pretty complicated, right? Release local log and return acknowledgement to the coordinator saying, okay, it has been updated. So, how can we know on which replica of the view, each replica of the original table, we should send the batch log? Well, we have a notion of pair replica. So this is the three original replica of the table user, right? And based on the primary key, so ID equals 1, so this is the first replica, this is the second replica, this is the third replica. And based on the primary key of the country, so we compute the hash value based on the primary key. This is the first replica of the view, the second replica, and the third replica. So we can pair the first replica of the base table with the first replica of the view. Okay. Always based on the hash value of the partition key. Why do we need a local lock? Because locking is expensive. Well, we want to be able, we want to make a concurrent update serializable. Otherwise, we will have consistency issue. I will explain it in detail right after. Why do we need a batch lock to push the mutation to the view? Because we need it in case of failure. In Cassandra, a batch log will be replayed automatically by the coordinator if it fails on some replica. So we don't want to force the client, the developer, to retry if the update to the view has failed. So we use batch log. And why do we use consistency level 1, hard-coded to 1, and not use the same consistency level requested by the original update? Well, because as you can see here, if we request quorum, we wait for two acknowledgments coming from two replica out of three. And if we also execute the batch log with quorum, we will also need to wait for two replica of the view. So in total, we need to wait for four machines. And if you have multiple views, the more you have views, and the more you need to wait for all of those acknowledgments. It is too expensive, right? Writing with Cassandra should be very fast. So we choose to use consistency level 1, and also to use asynchronous update, so we don't block, we don't wait for the reply. Now, why do we need the local lock? So let's consider this situation where you have the original country, which is UK. You have two concurrent updates to the country, one which set the country to US, and then the second one to FR. If we didn't have the local lock, what happened is the first thread will read the current value, UK, so it will remove the UK grow from the view, right? Meta is MV is materialized view. And then it inserts a new row into the view with the partition key US. The same thing happened here on this second thread, delete from the view where country is UK, and now insert a new value with partition key is FR. And now we have inconsistency because we have inserted in the view two rows, one with US, one with FR, right? It is inconsistent. With the lock, what happened is first, the first query will acquire the lock, local lock, will read UK, insert US, apply the update, so change the country to US, release the lock. So the second update, this time, the second update will read the current value is US and no longer UK. And then delete from the US, insert FR. So now with the local lock, all those operations can be serialized, and you don't have any more inconsistency. I mentioned about failure before. So what happens if my batch lock has failed because this node goes offline? Well, I don't care because there is a batch lock replay automatically handled by Cassandra for me. So the guarantee is that it will be eventually applied. So maybe not immediately, but after some time, when this machine goes online, the batch log will be applied to this machine, right? So by looking at the implementation, we understand that it has some performance impact. We have a local lock. We have a read before write, because before sending the batch log, before updating the view, we need to read the current value of the country. And this local read before write causes the most performance hit. But you need to understand that all this, you only pay the price once. Even if you have 1, 2, 3, 4 materialized view on the same table, the performance penalty because of the lock and read before write, you pay it once, only once. There is a second performance impact. The more you have view and the more you have mutation on your cluster, right? Every time I update my user table, I will have 2 extra mutations. One to delete the old value, the old row from the view, and one to insert the new row from the view, right? So I have extra mutation, 2, maximum 2 by materialized view. So you need to take care and to be aware of this when you design your schema. Nothing is free. But if now we compare to manual denormalization, suppose that you have to denormalize manually anyway. You need to create the user by country table anyway manually. In this case, materialized views is better because first, all this logic stays inside the cluster. If you have to do that manually, you need to read the value to fetch the value, the current value of the country from the cluster to the client, and then send an update to the denormalized table from the client back to the cluster. So it will involve network traffic. With materialized view, the network traffic is staying inside the cluster, right? And in terms of ease of use, it is better for a developer because you don't need to take care anymore about all of those updates. You update the base table, the view are synchronized by Cassandra for you. Oh, how does it compare to secondary index? Well, materialized view will be always faster because when you are reading from a view with the primary key, of course, you are hitting a single node because you provide a partition key. When you are using secondary index, it may scan the whole cluster. And you have only a single read pass. You are reading only the data file itself. With secondary index, you are reading the index file, and then you go back to read the data file. So in any case, MatriView's performance compared to secondary index, it will be faster. Consistency. Well, the consistency guarantee are weaker, right? If I'm writing a quorum, I am guaranteed that I have a quorum replicas of the base table which has received my write and committed at least to disk. But the guarantee is weaker for my view. The guarantee is that eventually a quorum of materialized view replica have received the delete plus insert mutation. Be careful about hotspot. There is no magic. A view is just a normal Cassandra table. So imagine you say, okay, I want to search user by gender, male or female. So let's create user by gender, right? Materialized view, where the partition key is the gender. How many distinct values do you have for gender? Two, maybe three, I don't know. Depends on. But most of the time, two. So most of you, your user will stay in two partitions, one for male, one for female, right? So you have a hotspot here on your cluster, which is what is true with normal tables still apply for materialized view. There is a restriction on static column. So a static column in Cassandra is a column which is attached to the partition key. So there is a one-to-one relationship between a static column and the partition key. And the reason the materialized view do not support static column is because if we support static column, it means that the materialized view should have the same partition key as the base table, which make it useless, because the idea of the materialized view is to play with the partition key, the primary key, and to change their ordering. Now, as an operator of a Cassandra cluster, I should be very careful about all the operations. So repair. When I repair my base table, my user table, it will trigger also updates on my materialized view. It is also possible to repair the materialized view independently from the base table, of course. When you have a read repair on the base table, it will update the materialized view. You have hints also apply on the base table, which will update the materialized view, of course. Imagine that you have a table already with a lot of data, 10 gigabytes, 100 gigabytes of data. Now you create a materialized view on this existing table. Well, it will take time to build, and you can monitor the build in this system key, so system table, so views built in progress, right? You can see that they are being built. The schema, because now the view depends on the base table, so you can, if you drop a column from the base table and this column is used by the view, well, it will not work. Also, you should drop the view first, all the view first, before dropping the base table, right? This is all very, very logic. We have the same kind of constraint in relational database. You cannot drop all the materialized view if you did not drop, or you cannot drop the base table before dropping the views. Question? Yes?
You mentioned the hotspots. Does that mean that the materialized views, they're not stored on the same node necessarily
as the underlying table. So you'll have...
Okay, so the question is, I was talking about the hotspot. Does it mean that the materialized view are not stored on the same nodes? Exactly. The view is another table with a different partition key. So imagine my user ID will stay on those three replica because the hash value of one is going here. But the hash value of the partition key of my view is FR. So it's a not different value.
So when you do the batch log and you do the delete and insert, potentially you would have to delete from one node and insert into another for the materialized view.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You get it.
More questions?
So when do you use secondary index over materialized views? Is there any specific use case you recommend to use secondary indexes?
Secondary index?
Yeah.
Multi-criteria search. The kind of use case you cannot know beforehand, how many criteria you have for your search. You cannot guess because there are too much combination.
You mentioned that there will be some new differences in 3.1. Materialized views are already possible. I didn't get the difference, or can you explain what will be new in 3.1?
3.10. Yeah. Oh, yes. So right now, the filtering, here we have some filtering, right? So I say copy the data, select, copy some columns from the original table to the view with a different primary key. If right now all the primary key is not null, which is obvious, I don't want to insert a row with a null primary key. But from Cassandra 3.10, which is not released yet, you can also add extra filtering, like where age is less than 30, and where and country is, and so arbitrary filtering. So this opened the door for a really nice use case where you can have a view. For example, I want to split my table between two populations, people which are less than 30 years old, people between 30 years old, 45 years old, and people after. So you can create three views with this condition on the age or on whatever, you see?
You mentioned the locks, but the locks are global for a table or it's a row level locks?
Partition level locks.
Partition level?
Yes.
Okay.
So if you have a small partition, it's fine. If you have in the scenario of IoTs where you have a huge partition, yeah, it has some cost. Table partition. Well, it has a cost where you have concurrent updates on the same partition. Of course. If it's different partition, you don't care.
Well, when you maintain the refresh, it's still later in materialized views. Is it redundant by the blocks?
Okay, I didn't hear quite well.
If you want to refresh the views, you want to, in order to prevent the stale data in materialized views, because I guess they take a snapshot, read consistent snapshot of the data. When you want to refresh them because the data...
You can do a repair. So when you repair the base table, it will also repair the view. Or you can repair only the view.
Okay.
So there are two things you should know. If you repair the base table, it will synchronize the data, the original data between the three replica. And also it will synchronize also the view, of course. Or you can only repair the views, which means that it only synchronizes the data between those three nodes. And it doesn't care about the original data. You see, you have two levels of repair.
Okay. So you can specify when you create the view what is the policy for being for keeping the view materialized in sync with the original data.
Sorry.
When you define the materialized view, normally like in any SQL database, you can define different policy for the view, how the view will be refreshed.
Oh, there is no policy. There is no policy. It refresh on real time. So whenever you update, it creates an asynchronous update to the view. This is real time update. So real time refresh as you. Right now there is no different refresh policy. There is only one, which is the default, which is the real time update.
Okay.
Yeah, it has some costs, of course. Yeah, but nothing is free.
Hi, sorry. If the writing of the materialized view is asynchronous, and so your node with that that holds the partition for that particular materialized view, if that goes down, does your base table that still works normally?
Yeah.
Full speed.
Yeah, exactly. So the consistency level is guaranteed for your base table. If I write a quorum in user, I am sure that my write has been written in at least two replica. This is true. Weaker guarantee for materialized view because asynchronous update and consistency level hard coded to one. So you may or may not see the update immediately. You may see it later. It is a design choice because we don't want to block the whole cluster. Because imagine you have a case where you have five views. Each of them will update a lot of different nodes. If you have to block for all those nodes, well, it will kill your write latency.
Does the materialized view table have replication as well? So for example, for the case of where you're doing lots of for the case where you're doing a sort of very like let's say read heavy, and your materialized view node goes down, is that view replicated onto other nodes?
You have three replica of the view.
Ah, I thought those were
no.
different partitions based on.
Yeah, but each partition has also a view is a normal table. That's it. Okay. The only difference is that all the update is managed for you by Cassandra. That's it.
And it has the same replication factor
yes,
as the base table.
Yes, exactly. Same replication factor defined on the key space. You can same the hints system, exactly same. Read repair, exactly same.
More questions?
Okay. So let's move on. We have lots of questions. But yeah, it's common. It's quite complex to understand, so it's normal you ask questions. User-defined function. It is much easier to understand. The idea of user-defined function is to push computation server-side to save network bandwidth, right? To simplify client code, for example, and also to accelerate analytics use case. If you need to do a sum, and you have 1,000 records, 1,000 rows. Right now, if you don't use a user-defined function or aggregate, what you need to do is to fetch those 1,000 records to the client and then do the sum. Now, it will be possible to do the sum directly on the cluster and only send back to the client one single value. So it will cut down your network bandwidth between the cluster and the client, right? So when you have a cluster of 10 machines, who cares? Netflix has a cluster of 1,000 machines. They do care, right? So it's a question of scale. How to create a user-defined function? Create or replace function if not exist. Key space dot function name. Parameter name 1, type 1, and so on. So let's analyze. A user-defined function, so UDF, is key space wide. So you cannot share a function between different key spaces. Okay. So you have a parameter name and parameter type. The parameter type refers to the SQL type. Text, Boolean, int, big int, and so on. Call or null input. It means that if you put null value for your function parameter, Cassandra will not check for that. So it is your responsibility in your source code to check for null values. Otherwise, you will get null pointer exception server side. Or if you want more safety, you can returns null or null input. What does it mean? It means that if one of the parameter of the function is null, just one of them, Cassandra will skip executing the function and return null directly. So you are sure that at least you will not have null inputs. Return type, the same. You define the type of the return value, so it is a SQL type. It can be a primitive, a collection, list, set, map, a tuple, or an UDT, user-defined type. Right? You choose the language of your function. So by default, out of the box, we support Java and JavaScript because we are using the Nashorn JavaScript engine in JDK 8. But it is not recommended because it's slow, obviously. If you want to use Scala or Groovy, Jython, JRuby, up to you. You need to add extra jar on the class path of your Cassandra process. And then you put your source code here, right? So let's see some demo. Function. So I have a table, artist, you have seen already, my artist. It has a born date, it has a die date, and so on. I want to compute the age of the artist. So instead of fetching the whole row, I will try to do it server side. I'm using Java, so born date, which is a text, die date, which is a text. If the born date is null, or the born date is empty, I return null because if I don't have the born date of someone, I cannot compute his age, of course, obviously. Else, now I need to do some tricks with regular expression because my data is not clean. So sometimes my date has this format, year, month, day. Sometimes I have only the years and the months. Sometimes I have only the year. So I need to do some regular expression to extract only the born year. If the die date is null or empty, it means that the artist is still alive. So I will take the current year, new date, right? Otherwise, I extract the year, and then I compute die year minus born year, and I return. And of course, I catch number format exception in case of. Finish. Okay, I created my function. Now let's use this function. Select name, compute age, born die from the artist where ID in. So I have some sample data. So Mariah Carey has this ID, John Lennon, and Tokyo Electron. I don't know this guy. So Tokyo Electron, null. Why? Because I don't have the born date. So if I don't have the born date, I cannot compute the age, don't I return null. Mariah Carey, she was born on 70s, she's still alive. So I can compute her age by taking the current year, 2016, right? John Lennon, die date minus born date, 40 years old. Okay, quite simple. Now, the real useful use case for user-defined function is user-defined aggregates. Group by, sum, average. And now, how do we define the aggregates? Create or replace aggregate, if not exist. Key space, the name of the aggregate. Now, what is very strange is you only define the types of the parameters of your aggregate, not the name. You need to define the accumulator function and the state type. Maybe a finite function and then the initial condition. What does it mean? It means that the aggregate you are defining here, you can see it as an accumulator. You know, with Java 8, we have the stream. With reduced left or for left, all those operations. So this is exactly the same idea. So we start with an initial condition, and for each row we read from Cassandra, we accumulate in using the accumulator function into a state. Okay. And there are some tricky undocumented dependencies. The types of your aggregate should, your accumulator function, the first type, the first parameter type should be the state type of your aggregate. And then the following parameter type should have the same type as your aggregate. So it's quite tricky. The final function is optional. So imagine that you have accumulated a lot of values into your state, and then you want to perform a final transformation. Then final function. So your UDA return type is, if you have a final function, it is the return type of your final function. Otherwise, the return type is the state type. So don't be worried, don't be afraid. I have an example it will be much clearer with the example. Well, I hope so. So let's see my accumulator function. So each artist has a musical style. Select style from music artist limit 10. Okay. Oh, okay. 100. Unknown. Okay. So you see, each artist has a list of musical styles. Okay. This is a list. What we want now is compute how many times we have seen rock or salsa for all the artists in one country. So it's like a count style group by country, something like this. So first we create the accumulator function. The accumulator function is style count. The state is a map, because to accumulate you need a map, right? The key of the map is the style, rock, salsa. The value of the map is how many times I have seen rock and salsa. And as input, I have the list of musical style for each artist. And I return the map itself after adding the value. So for each of the musical style, if my state contains already this musical style, I increment the counter. Otherwise, I initialize the counter to 1. Pretty simple. Return the state. This is my accumulator function. Now, for my aggregate style distribution, I said, okay, now create this aggregate. The input is a list of musical style. The accumulator function is the function I has defined before. The type of the state is a map. The initial value of my map is an empty map. So this is a literal value in Java, Cassandra for empty map. JavaScript notation, in fact, right? Empty map. So as you can see, my accumulator function first type is the same as the state type here of my aggregate, and then my aggregate has the list text which corresponds to the second parameter. Okay. Now let's say, give me the music style distribution from my view. So I can apply also function and aggregate on the materialized view. So give me all the music distribution on my view, artist by country, where country is USA. So this is the aggregate. So punk, you have 207 artists, which has punk style, and knows a lot. Rock should has a lot. Where is rock? Rock here, and so on. So the result is a map. Be careful. The application of the function or the aggregates is done on the coordinator and not on each replica. Why? Because we need to solve inconsistency with last right win. Because you can have inconsistency between different replicas, and you can only merge all the solve all the inconsistency only on the coordinator. So first, Cassandra will read all the value from different replica, merge them together on the coordinator, and then apply the function or aggregates. Last right win logic. In Cassandra, UDA is not distributed. So if you execute an aggregate on a large number of rows, it will be very slow. Potentially on different partition, it will be worse. So I have a matrix here. If you are using consistency level 1 and using a single partition aggregate, you can use the native aggregate from Cassandra. If you want to aggregate on multiple partition, use Apache Spark. Apache Spark, because it has been designed for this kind of use case. Question? No question? Yes, question here.
For the Java functions in the that you write yourself,
yes.
Does it already support like Java 8 syntax? So where you've got your loop.
And in fact, there is a lot of limitation. I didn't tell you. The secret is there is a blacklist and whitelist. You cannot import class. You cannot create a socket. Everything which is creating a file on disk, creating a socket on network, forbidden, blacklisted. Why? We don't want to let people create a new file on the server side with arbitrary code, right? Obvious. And also, you cannot import extra library. For example, you cannot import Guava or whatever. The reasoning is simple. If I need to import a bunch of external library to execute my function, it means that the logic of my function is too complex. So maybe it's not a good idea to execute it on the server. And there is another thing. There is a sandbox. All those functions and aggregates are executed in a separated class loader. And there is a timeout and a separated thread pool. And there is a timeout. So if we wait, we execute the function and wait. And if it is too long, we kill. So we don't want your arbitrary code to impact the performance of the server.
More questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Right on time.